This is Second Look. I'm Bob Levicky, WMRA's news director. Thanks for joining me for our review of the week's news. I'm grateful to have your company. We're going to get a Virginia politics roundup, and we'll see what a group called 100 Black Men of Central Virginia has been doing to narrow the math skills gap between African-American students and their white counterparts. And we've got this week's edition of Our Island Universe. But first, Virginia has executed a man who killed a hospital security guard and sheriff's deputy after escaping from custody in 2006. That happened in Blacksburg. 35-year-old William Morva was pronounced dead at 9:15 p.m. Thursday after an injection at the Greensville Correctional Center in Jarrett. He had no last words. Morva's lawyer said his crimes were the result of a severe mental illness that prevented him from distinguishing between delusions and reality. It was the first execution carried out in Virginia under a new protocol that makes more of the lethal injection procedure secret. In the final hours last night, lawyers for Morva raised concerns over the concoction of lethal injection drugs used for the execution. And as Virginia Public Radio's Mallory No Payne reports, Virginia's governor denied that last-minute appeal.
Virginia law allows the state to buy lethal injection drugs in secret from compounding pharmacies instead of directly from pharmaceutical manufacturers. Many pharmaceutical companies have stopped selling the drugs under pressure from activists. When Virginia last used this mix of chemicals for an execution in January, witnesses say the inmate appeared to gasp and convulse before dying. Morva's lawyer, Don Davison, witnessed his execution.
His stomach would concave in completely, and he would kind of convulse a little bit as though he was gasping for air. And that went on for perhaps a minute or two.
Except for Texas, Virginia is now the state with the most executions since the death penalty was reinstated in the 1970s. In Richmond, I'm Mallory No Payne.
Now, from our partner station WCVE in Richmond, Soraya Wintersmith sat down to review the week in Virginia politics with Richmond Times-Dispatch political commentator Jeff Shapiro.
Jeff, we learned this week that Governor Terry McAuliffe decided against extending executive clemency to Virginia death row inmate William Morva. Morva, of course, was convicted of three counts of capital murder after he shot and killed two men while trying to escape state custody in 2006. On Thursday, just hours before Morva's scheduled execution, the governor released a statement explaining how he had arrived at the decision not to extend clemency.
The governor refused to intervene, and this despite pressure from overseas leaders, from faith leaders, to spare Morva. They said that Morva was delusional and incapable of telling right from wrong. But the governor rejected those calls and in doing so cited testimony by mental health experts who had been called by defense lawyers. They indicated that Morva may have had personality disorders, but that he knew what he was doing when he committed these murders and that he understood the consequences.
Jeff, this week we also learned a company Governor McAuliffe was once affiliated with will now have to pay what it owes to the state of Mississippi. The state auditor there has made a formal request that Green Tech Automotive repay more than $5 million of public funds.
Governor McAuliffe, of course, had a stake in Green Tech. He disposed of that stake in 2012, a year before he was elected governor. Mississippi contends that this public money that was given to the company to build a factory and to generate jobs has produced neither a factory of consequence nor jobs. Clearly not a story McAuliffe wants to read, see, or hear, not as long as he's busy with the campaign to elect his successor. And obviously the governor would like to see Ralph Northam elected. And the governor doesn't want to read, see, or hear much about this story while his name is being bandied about for president in 2020. Now, this dispute will give the governor's detractors an excuse to dredge up all those other allegedly iffy business deals in which McAuliffe has been involved, and that would include the takeover of a communications company, Global Crossing. Maybe that's a name that rings a bell with some of our listeners. It famously collapsed, but only after Terry McAuliffe had made a fortune.
And just in time for the 4th of July holiday, Republican gubernatorial candidate Ed Gillespie rolled out a policy proposal to legalize more fireworks in the Commonwealth. Gillespie says he wants to give Virginians the freedom to enjoy the 4th of July like neighboring states Tennessee and West Virginia.
And with a bang, Ed Gillespie is trying again to change the subject by talking about this somewhat noisy subject, if you will. Ed Gillespie didn't have to talk about a subject that's generating a lot more noise, and that's the healthcare debate in Washington. Ralph Northam, the Democratic nominee, keeps warning voters that the Republican replacement for Obamacare, and like most Democrats, Northam calls it Trump care, means that thousands of Virginians won't be able to see a doctor. And Northam has been focusing on Medicaid. It is widely used in the countryside, which is Republican Trump country. And it is Northam's contention that vulnerable Virginians will be more so if the Republicans have their way. Now, Ed Gillespie is not saying much about all of this, and that's because this is not a state that was carried by Donald Trump last November, and it is a state in which the president's popularity is broadening. But this is a tricky issue for Ed Gillespie. He has to figure out a way to simultaneously assure Trump voters that he's on the president's side, but he also needs to convince election-deciding independents who dislike Trump that he's not beholden to him.
And speaking of the Virginia governor's race, Jeff, we have a third candidate that's going to be on the ballot in November.
Yes, and his name is Cliff Hira, and he is the Libertarian candidate, a lawyer who grew up in Northern Virginia in a two-party family. He now lives in the Mechanicsville area. That's just outside Richmond here. He is in favor of lower taxes, and he wants to legalize marijuana. As he put it in his kickoff this week, these are his words, "We're spending too much money enforcing the counterproductive prohibition on marijuana use." Hira will be on the ballot. It's the second time a Libertarian has achieved that since 2013. 4 years ago, Robert Sarvis was the Libertarian nominee, and he pulled a record 7% of the vote. That's the best performance for a third-party candidate for governor. At the time, many Virginians were uncomfortable voting for Terry McAuliffe or his Republican opponent, Ken Cuccinelli.
Jeff, our time is up. It's always a pleasure talking with you.
Thank you, Soraya. Have a wonderful weekend.
You as well.
Now, for our feature story of the week. 8 years ago, educators in the Charlottesville area noticed that when it came to math, there was an achievement gap between African-American students and their white peers. And so, an academy was born to try to improve those skills. And as WMRA's Jordy Yeager reports, what has resulted is much more.
Every morning for the last 2 weeks, about 30 kids made their way into Murray High School. They're all between 5th and 8th grade, and they're attending a two-week summer academy called M-Cubed. It's put on by the 100 Black Men of Central Virginia. At the front of the room is Wes Bellamy, the group's president. Each morning, he asks the kids to start the day by reciting the group's creed.
1, 2, 3.
We believe we are scholars of
honor. You're going to say this creed and you believe that you are the scholars of the 100 Black Men of Central Virginia, you have to be what?
Confident.
You have to be what?
Confident.
In life, we have to be what?
Confident.
Do we meet expectations?
We exceed them.
And why do we never fail?
Because we never give up.
Bellamy's not only the group's president, he's the only African-American city councilor in Charlottesville, and he's the city's vice mayor. But for these 2 weeks, he's the kid's teacher.
So M-Cubed stands for Math Men on a Mission. And essentially what it is a summer academy for African-American males from Albemarle and Charlottesville, in which we go over everything from math and geometry to improving their writing, but also manhood development and more specifically what it means to be an African-American male in this area.
The 2 weeks is a journey. Every morning after the creed, they dive into an hour-long lesson on a weighty issue. But it all centers around value, around building the confidence to engage with the world as it is. Most of the week, that learning happens in the classroom, but it doesn't stop there. One day, Charlottesville Police Chief Al Thomas joined the kids. The next, it was City Manager Maurice Jones, Charlottesville Firefighter Lance Blakey, City Employment Specialist Matthew Murphy, and a half dozen other local African-American professionals who are shaping the city's future. Together, they shared stories of what changed their lives when they were kids, and they imparted lessons they learned along the way. But the days aren't all super heavy. Kids are kids, after all. After recess in the afternoon, the kids break up for intensive math lessons. In one group, rising eighth graders tackle advanced algebra 2 to 3 years beyond their grade level. They then put some of that book knowledge into action by building and programming a small robot to drive a track in the classroom.
I built it. He's more of the coding guy. I'm more of the building guy. So
we built that in the first class in like 30 minutes.
Jaden is 12 and his partner, Connor, is 13. They go to Henley Elementary in Albemarle County.
These 2 weeks, it helps us get a head start on math and geometry. And I think that's really helped us be disciplined and learn about like life more. And it makes us better people.
Jaden and Connor's class for these 2 weeks was taught by Pastor Ricky White and Alex Beverly. Alex is 17 now, but he started with the 100 Black Men almost 6 years ago.
So in sixth grade, I wasn't the most confident. I wouldn't speak out in groups or anything. So it's made me a really, really great public speaker. And it's helped me with confidence. When I moved to Richmond, it was easier to meet people and get involved because of the skills I learned in the program. And go after what I wanted to do.
For Alex, that's meant becoming an oral surgeon. He knows it'll mean 4 years of college, 4 years of dental school, and 4 more years of residency. It's that sort of goal-oriented thinking that the program pushes kids towards. To get the younger kids to grasp what that actually entails, one morning for their lesson, Bellamy listed out on a giant whiteboard all the costs that come with adulthood.
How much do you all think rent or mortgage is a month? Let's just throw some numbers out. Let me hear.
About 500.
500?
820.
Electric bills, cable, internet, car payments, credit cards, the list went on, eventually agreeing that it takes about $5,000 a month to live decently in Charlottesville. But then Bellamy took it a step further.
But if you're not willing to put the work in school, if you're not willing to put the work in to get the credentials to be able to acquire or command this kind of salary, how are you going to be able to pay those bills or live that lifestyle that you're talking about?
The lessons can sneak up on the kids, too. At one point one morning, Bellamy asked several students to stand in preparation to say the creed. Then another teacher knocked on the door and the class was momentarily distracted. The other teacher left and Bellamy asked one of the standing students to sit down. The student objected, saying, "No, you told me to stand." Bellamy seized the moment.
How often has something similar like that happened to you all at school? And what happens normally? How many of us choose to go back and forth with the teacher or the instructor? And then think about it. Think about it. Where does us going back and forth get us?
The 100 Black Men of Central Virginia has been around long enough now that the results are clear. The kids' test scores are increasing, as is their placement in advanced level classes, and the very first group of kids is now going off to college. Bellamy's changed too. The group has raised him, he says. He puts his all into being with these kids, and at the end of the day, he gets emotional, and he worries. Is it enough? But then he comes back to his creed, their creed.
We believe we are the scholars of the 100 Black Men.
For WMRA News, I'm Jordy Yeager.
We are successful.
It was just 1 year ago that that Central Virginia chapter of 100 Black Men beat out more than 100 other groups across the country to get the 100 Black Men of America's Chapter of the Year Award for mentoring. Jordy took the opportunity to talk with some of the young men involved, and here's his report from last summer.
Belonging to the 100 Black Men of Central Virginia is no cakewalk. It's the largest African-American mentoring program in the area for more than 200 middle and high school students. And the kids fall under some pretty tight scrutiny.
We track things such as their daily attendance in school, their discipline referrals, their grades.
Dr. Bernard Harrison is the president of the Charlottesville-based group, which began 7 years ago. Adult mentors in the organization take the young mentees under their wings. They push them to excel in and out of school and expose them to new opportunities. And Harrison says something interesting has happened along the way.
And most recently, I was impressed to see how many of our young men who have gone through our mentoring program, and they have emerged as student leaders.
Presidents and vice presidents of their class, English Honor Society, National Mentee of the Year, Harrison says everywhere he looked, the group's young men were striving towards this year's theme of leadership impact.
Leadership is an attitude. And as long as our young men see individuals with the attitude and the belief that they are in need of being a leader, they will step up.
On a recent Monday evening at Burley Middle School, where Harrison served as principal for nearly a decade, he brought together five of these student leaders to share their experiences with the up-and-coming generation.
And so the whole idea of having this program is what they see is what they'll be. When they see young men who are leaders in their schools, the younger ones will aspire, set realistic goals. And we're going to see it emerge. We're going to see this thing grow. Our mission is about eliminating achievement gaps. And when we present positive images of our young men, we're just going to see this growth mindset change this whole community just from growing up and growing out.
The five students sat as panelists behind a long table in the school's cafeteria and addressed the audience of more than 50 younger kids and their parents.
All right, so my name is Andrew Martin. I'm in the eighth grade at Southern Middle School, and I'm also the president of the school. So, I'm the president of the school.
Martin's mentor is Wes Bellamy, the only African-American member of Charlottesville City Council and the city's vice mayor. He's characteristic of many of the mentors, who hold leadership roles themselves, setting examples for the kids.
A lot of people helped me out. If they didn't help me out, I wouldn't be at the point I am today. So they've had a really big impact on my life. And the way I describe a leader is a person who doesn't, like, when there's bad times, he rises to the occasion. He doesn't fall to the occasion. Exact quotes from West Bellamy.
Mentors don't take the place of parents necessarily, but rather they add to the family experience, working together to connect them with a broader community outside the home. Parents in the audience asked the panel of students a wide range of questions, from what advice they would offer younger kids to how they would respond to negative feedback as leaders. Najee Jones has been in the 100 Black Men since he was in sixth grade. In the fall, he's headed to George Mason University. Jones recently went to the prestigious Governor's School for Fine Arts program, and he tells the crowd that he's been the only African-American lead all 4 years in theater productions at Monticello High School.
I guess you say I started that movement of, like, starting the diversity in the theater department at Monticello. So I'm pretty proud of that. So no questions?
Yeah, let me ask you. You said you're the first African-American to be on that drama club.
Right.
If you didn't see anyone there looking like you, what prompted you to want to be a part of it?
There are a lot of girls in theater.
But in all seriousness, Jones tells the younger kids in the audience to follow their passions, pursue activities that truly interest them, even if their friends aren't doing them. Afterwards, I wanted to see what impact their advice had on younger members of the crowd. And so with Dr. Harrison by his side, I caught up with 12-year-old T.J. Brooks. He's been in the 100 Black Men of Central Virginia for about 4 years and is entering eighth grade at Henley Middle School this fall.
And what did you think of tonight?
Well, it showed a lot of us that, like, we're not the only ones striving to be, like, we can stand out as a person, but that we all could be leaders. Like, we all could show other people how leaders act. My personal belief of leadership is, like, having someone to look up to, like a role model, or having someone that you could strive to be when you get older.
And do you have a role model that you look up to?
Dr. Harrison.
For WMRA News, I'm Jordy Yeager.
I'm Chanel Verani, and this is Our Island Universe. We have a fairly good calendar of events. About 14 billion years ago, the universe was created in a hot big bang, with galaxies forming very early thereafter. About 5 billion years ago, our sun and its family of planets formed in a rather ordinary galaxy. About 500 million years ago, there was an explosion of life in our planet's oceans. What about humans? What is our story? Science has begun piecing together the various pieces of the jigsaw puzzle, and a picture is beginning to emerge. In 2016, three different teams of geneticists analyzed DNA collected from cultures around the globe. The genomes were drawn from indigenous populations of people: Basques, African Pygmies, Mayans, Bedouins, Sherpas, and Cree Indians, to name just a few. All three studies concluded that all non-Africans today trace their ancestry to the African continent that left between 50,000 and 80,000 years ago. Until recently, the oldest known fossils of our species dated back just 195,000 years, all of which were found in Ethiopia. This earlier work had suggested a single cradle of mankind in East Africa where these fossils were found. But a new discovery published early in 2017 has now found even older Homo sapien remains. What is truly shocking is that these fossils were found in Morocco and date to about 300,000 years ago. If confirmed, this study suggests that our species may have evolved in multiple locations across the African continent and that we appeared much earlier than we thought. Once on the scene, our species very quickly began exploring our world. Researchers in Israel found a few distinctively modern human skeletons that are between 120,000 and 90,000 years old. In Saudi Arabia and India, sophisticated tools date back as far as 100,000 years. Chinese scientists reported finding teeth belonging to Homo sapiens that are at least 80,000 years old and perhaps as old as 120,000 years. What is clear is that almost as soon as we arose, we began wandering. Exploration is innate to humankind, and it is something that we have been doing since we first appeared on the scene. I am Chanel Varani, director of the John C. Wells Planetarium at James Madison University.
Support for WMRA's News and Information Fund, which makes our award-winning coverage possible, is provided by Bibb and Dolly Frazier, Les and Johnny Grady, Klein May Realty, Eugene Stoltzfus Architects, Joy Loving, Janet Trettner, Nancy Barber, Pam and Jim Huggins, an anonymous donor, and by a grant from a donor-advised fund of the Community Foundation of Harrisonburg and Rockingham County. If you'd like to learn more about how we fund our local and regional news coverage and how you can support it, go to WMRA.org, mouse over news, then click on News and Information Fund. And you'll find all of our stories at that website, and be sure to click like on Facebook at WMRA Public Radio. And follow me on Twitter at WMRA News to get the latest on our coverage. Tomorrow morning, we'll have reports from Jordi Yeager and Emily Richardson Lorente from the scene yesterday as Charlottesville reacts to a march by the KKK. And beginning tomorrow morning, you'll be able to get WMRA's daily newscast at your convenience. It's a new podcast called the WMRA Daily. And starting tomorrow morning, the WMRA Daily will bring you the latest local, regional, and statewide news and WMRA feature stories. Find it at WMRA.org early every weekday morning or subscribe to the podcast. You can check that out right now. I'm Bob Levicky, WMRA's news director and morning edition host. I'll talk to you in the morning. Enjoy the rest of your Sunday.